Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 8:19. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Anton L. listening in from Cape Town says, Howard, it's already 15 degrees and the sun is shining. So max 16 degrees is wrong. Well, that's my fault because I listen to IOL and we know what happens when we do. All right. That was a very, very spicy comment. We can ignore that. Let's go on to something perhaps even a little bit more spicy and difficult. Well, Terence Corrigan, not him. But the subject matter. Terence is a project manager at the Institute of Race Relations, talking about Ramaphosa. If he actually had the desire to stop Malema from singing Kill the Boer, would he be able to, in fact, do so? Terence, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Beautifully. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Nice crisp morning.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So now, this, from what I'm understanding, I'm not sure how much of a desire there is for Cyril Ramaphosa to stop Malema from singing Kill the Boer. But take us through this a little bit. Give us some understanding of where he stands and what he would be able to do, if anything.
Okay. I think that one has to distinguish the political from the legal on this. Now, my understanding is that AfriForum in particular has tried to take this through the courts. They've been doing this for well over a decade through the Human Rights Commission. They've had some successes as to whether this is hate speech, which is the principle that they've been invoking. But ultimately, things seem to have come down against them. The Constitutional Court has ruled, said, you know, there's no prospect anyone would find differently. Hate speech, this is not hate speech. It's a perfectly legitimate political chant. Now, it seems to me that chanting something, you know, that uses the word kill, irrespective of how metaphorical it is or how much a treasured part of the national historical fabric it may be, it sits very uncomfortably with a constitutional democracy. The reason we vote is so we don't have to shoot. So, you know, I don't think that there's very much that could be done to legally restrain Malema, the EFF, or for that matter, anyone else. But what I have said publicly is that there is nothing stopping President Ramaphosa from saying this is no place in a constitutional democracy. You know, what may have been appropriate in 1985 or you know, whatever your frame of reference is, simply doesn't work now. You know, societies do evolve; their politics, thankfully, evolves, which is why we have universal franchises. You know, whereas we didn't in 1985. So yes, you know, he could stand up as the president of the country and say, you know, while he's got every right to do that, or he's got, you know, whatever rights the courts may have afforded him, there is something wrong with signaling out part of your population for this sort of stigmatization. We have one of the highest murder rates in the world. The chief rabbi was saying more people are killed in South Africa than the U.S. and European Union combined in a given year. That would make the invocation of violence, however metaphorical, I would say a morally turgid thing. You know, it's a bit like saying, there is no law that says you can't cheat on your wife. However,
there's this adultery. You've got this moral and legal separation of the issues. Yeah.
So, but the reason why I have very little confidence that the president would go that way is that to do that would, in a sense, be to cede the ANC's revolutionary credential. And it would also be about the president actually being the president of the whole country rather than the president of the ANC, which I think is always the office he has taken as his priority.
Which is interesting because during his inauguration speech, he indicated that he has heard the people of the country and he wants to be a president for all, but that it was clearly just words because he hasn't shown that to be the case at all. What I find fascinating is that any normal person, and I know that is an impossible, really, a definition, But you ask somebody, anybody with a simple understanding of English understands that shoot the Boer, kill the farmer is an awful, awful phrase. It's just an understanding. And yet the court found that there was all this nuance. You know, when we started, you spoke about separating politics. Do you think the Constitutional Court were able to separate politics when they made that ruling?
I'm reluctant to comment on their legal reasoning because I'm not a legal guy myself. But you know what I would say is this: that they we have seen this coming up repeatedly in legal and in sort of quasi legal fora like the South African Human Rights Commission, that in order to obtain equality, people should not be treated equally. So a couple of years ago, I think Priscilla Jana, who was a senior official at the Human Rights Commission, said they treat complaints and offences differently if they if they receive from white or black complainants or racial issues, and it's because of historical context. You know, look, okay, now if that's your view, you are not talking about human rights. You are talking about a sort of conditional entitlement or conditional privilege that depends on your. Yes, you know, but we are very attached to our to the trappings of universal morality, not so much to the sort of practical implications thereof. I imagine if the offenders there had been wearing khaki and had faux swastikas on their shoulders and were using a different target, then that would have been seen as very much a no-no. My own view, I tend to be very much rather go for more free speech than less. So while I could defend the idea that you have a right to do it, I think it's at the very least criminally irresponsible. You know, in South Africa, the political assassination has made a return. This is not some sort of abstract invocation of something that happened back in the Viking era. This is something that, this is a mode of politics that exists now.
It's fascinating because it is, I think one of the comments that you made certainly resonated for me is that we know that the only identity that the ANC has that is, or that it seems important to them, is their revolutionary identity. And that is why they love the relationship with Cuba and Russia and China and Hamas, or they'll say Palestinians, but however you want to slice that one, and letting go of this one or coming out with a strong stance on this would remove them from that. But that's really incredibly, incredibly sad, because it just means that there is no, that South Africa and South Africans are not part of the, are high up on the list of priorities of the ANC.
No, well, there was a phrase that took hold in the 1980s, the people. They used to see this all over the place, and it was often used as a sort of assertion of the primacy of political identity. So I remember reading once the conflict between Inkatha and the people. This was about sort of associating humanity with a particular political cause. And I don't think that, I think that runs very, very deep. I would say in partial and qualified defense of the ANC that this was thinking that went way beyond their structures. In fact, the best and the crispest interpretation of the people actually came from a document published by the South African Council of Churches that distinguished the people from people in general. And
interesting.
From that, you kind of get into this idea that a human right is contingent on your on where your politics is. Whether you are part of the polity depends on how you see the world and how you identify. And we pay a price for this, not just in the insecurity and in the ill will that this generates, but in the fact that this bespeaks a whole kind of submerged iceberg of pathologies that keep South Africa scraping along at 1% growth. You know, something, you know, an organization like the Vietnamese Communist Party, you know, authoritarian though it is, at least realized in the 1980s we can't go on like this. So now, you know, the Vietnamese all became capitalists and didn't stand around with their dongs in their hands, dong being the currency of Vietnam. Whereas in South Africa, you know, there's this constant litigation of the 1960s, even though it always surprises me just how ignorant we often are about our own history.
Absolutely.
So there's, you know, I don't see us really moving forward until we can shift that mindset.
Yep, I tend to agree. And I'm going to paraphrase and reuse your phrase, is that the ANC really shouldn't just be standing around with their dongs in their hands. That is Terence Corrigan. I'm sorry, I'm probably going to get into a lot of trouble for that. Might even get you into trouble for absolutely no reason. But that's just
the currency of Vietnam.
Exactly. Thank you for clarifying, Terence Corrigan. Thank you for that. I'd love your thoughts, your reaction to that conversation. Terence is project manager at the Institute of Race Relations.